When AI dialogue gets lost in translation, from American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino. We hear words like safety and transparency thrown around a lot in the AI industry, but they don't always mean the same things to tech insiders as they do to the rest of us. Take, for instance, a 2016 paper by a roster of prominent AI researchers with OpenAI, Google, and Anthropic on their resumes. It's called Concrete Problems in AI Safety. But as tech journalist Karen Howe points out, the safety problems described might not be the ones consumers or policymakers are most worried about, but rather the risk that machine learning systems could behave in unintended ways. She wrote a whole glossary of terms like this a few years ago for MIT Technology Review.
When we talk about safety in the public domain, you would automatically think of, oh, this system isn't going to harm me. It's not going to violate my privacy. It's not going to make judgments on me that could greatly negatively impact my life. But in the paper, it explicitly says that none of these things are what they mean by safety. It just refers to, for them, essentially preventing AI from becoming rogue and misaligned. Of course, because of this confusion, companies can say, we are investing a lot in AI safety. We care a lot about keeping AI safe. And that does a lot of work for them in the public, assuming that all of these things are taken care of.
Right. What are some of the harms that the public might think they would like to be protected from?
Yeah, one of the things that we've seen a lot of research done recently, both in academia and in journalism, is how image generators can create really racist, stereotypical images. These kind of like embedded biases have a really big impact on the content that we are going to continue seeing on the internet, because these systems are being used to generate enormous volumes of images and text. And that goes back into the internet and into downstream applications that are being built on top of these technologies. That is kind of like one of the like very prevalent, glaring harms that we see now that really companies are not talking about and not investing a lot in to change.
What's really at stake here? I mean, why is it important that the industry is using language in a way that might be at odds with how the public or policymakers interpret it?
I think what's at stake is just that we won't realize what the actual harms are. If companies can use terms to shift our focus to a different set, to look somewhere else, they get to continue doing what they're doing elsewhere. And so this is what's at stake, is like, we are going to end up with these terminologies and these definitions codified into the regulatory frameworks that are meant to hold these companies accountable. And in fact, it ends up just paving the way for them to continue doing what they've always done, which could also involve harming the public.
So back in 2021, you put together this glossary of some of the common terms that come up a lot in AI ethics. We talked about safety, but we wanted to dive into some of the others. So let's start with transparency. This sounds very good. Do you want to read the definition that you wrote in your glossary for transparency?
Yeah, this was one of my favorites at the time. Transparency, a noun. Revealing your data and code, bad for proprietary and sensitive information, thus really quite hard, frankly even impossible, not to be confused with clear communication about how your system actually works. And the thinking behind this one was there were so many arguments that I was hearing at the time from these companies saying, oh, but, you know, we can't actually do what you're asking us to do. We can't just publish our code on the internet. Or actually, an even subtler one was, I remember when Elon Musk was buying Twitter, I think he said, we will publish the code, which is also a very interesting, it's sort of like two sides of the same coin, where automatically in both instances, there is the equating of transparency with the literal publication of code, which, if you think about it, the average person in the public doesn't actually know how to read code, so that doesn't actually increase transparency at all. The way that AI systems work is actually, it's not present necessarily in the code. The code just says, we've digested this data. And that's all it says. It doesn't say what the machine has learned. It doesn't say like how it's making decisions now. That's actually all has to be audited through other means other than just reviewing code. And so it's one of those examples where the tech industry can easily turn the definition of one word that means something totally different in the public domain into something else that then becomes intractable.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Marketplace Tech. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino. We're back with Karen Howe. Okay, we also have to talk about the word regulation, something that comes up a lot in this context. What do industry leaders mean when they say regulation?
I mean, the thing that companies always do is they call for regulation as a way to kind of shift responsibility of mitigating the harmful impacts of their technologies to policymakers. And it's sort of, it's like a common saying within Silicon Valley that government and policymakers are incompetent. And so the reason why they say this is because they believe that the government will actually ultimately be ineffective and not be able to implement this regulation. But if you say, oh, yes, we do want to work with you to develop this regulation, then you seem like the nice guy that is trying to cooperate. And this is exactly the way that OpenAI also does it. I mean, Sam Altman said in his testimony to Congress, you know, we believe regulating AI is essential. We're eager to help you. We're going to work with you to balance the harms and benefits of this technology. But then, as you can see in just the past few months, there has been significantly more pressure from different groups like artists associations or from authors and journalism organizations demanding some kind of regulation around the use of copyrighted material in training AI systems. Then OpenAI sort of changes their tune and they say, because copyright today covers virtually every sort of human expression, including blog posts, photographs, forum posts, scraps of software code, and government documents, it would be impossible to train today's leading AI models without using copyrighted materials. So what that suggests is, before, when OpenAI was talking a lot about how they would love regulation, it means they want to shape regulation that will entrench their dominance rather than check it. And then when push comes to shove, you realize that their real intent, or like the real meaning behind the way that they use this term, is really just as a shield rather than to truly collaborate with government.
You wrote your AI glossary back in 2021 at the dawn of the AI boom, kind of before ChatGPT really exploded in the public eye. Are there any terms that you would add to that glossary now, almost 3 years later?
Yeah. So one thing that's happened is the anthropomorphization of AI systems has gone through the roof. And so you do have specific terms that fall in this category, like hallucinations. Hallucinations for the AI industry refers to generative AI, when a generative AI system produces some kind of information that is incorrect or undesirable. The thing that I find problematic about this term is that it makes it sound like it is just an accident. Like these systems, you know, when humans hallucinate, it's like a weird aberration in our behavior. It is a weird anomaly. But in an AI system, it is literally designed to do that. And so there's this kind of subtle distortion through the term hallucination that suggests that somehow this is abnormal and it will be fixed at some point, and then the chatbots will start to behave normally in a way that is expected. That's not like the underlying technology is designed to hallucinate. So we need to find sort of a better term for this. There's also all these arguments that with the copyrighted data lawsuits, for example, that AI systems, quote unquote, are inspired just like human artists, or they, quote unquote, read just like humans read. And that is just wholly not how these systems work. They're not reading like humans or being inspired like humans, but these are very, very clever ways of taking the legal liability off of these organizations that are just wholesale taking, hoovering up data that is legally not allowed to use. And so I think that's that. Like, there's a whole category of those types of terms now that are used to really continue to confuse what's actually happening underneath the surface with the development of these technologies. And they've become increasingly effective because so many people interact with ChatGPT and do feel like they are talking to some kind of human on the other side. And that's why those terms are so persuasive.
That was Karen Howe, a contributing writer for The Atlantic. We've got a link to Karen Howe's full glossary for MIT Technology Review called Big Tech's Guide to Talking About AI Ethics. It's at our website, marketplacetech.org. Karen is now a contributing writer to The Atlantic, where she most recently wrote about the environmental impacts of the AI boom, which is fueling the growth of power and water-hungry data centers in regions that are already warming due to climate change. She's currently working on a book about OpenAI due out next year. Rosie Hughes produced this episode. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.